Welcome back to the OU Shnei Mikra Project and our study of Parshat Vayetze. This is Menachem Liebtag, and in today's share we study Shvi, the seventh Aliyah, beginning with Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Mem Gimel, chapter 31, verse 43. Yesterday's Aliyah ended with Yaakov lashing out at Lavan and finally opening his mouth after being mistreated for some 20 years, being tricked and taken advantage of in front of all of Lavan's family and all of his own family members. He finally told everybody how he's been mistreated by Lavan over and over again for the last 20 years, explaining how honest and true he has been, and how cunning and evil Lavan has been. Despite the speech by Yaakov, Lavan remains sure that he's right. Pasuk Mem Gimel, Vayan Lavan Vayomer Yaakov. Lavan answers and tells Yaakov, very nice speech, but bottom line, Habanot Benotai, the daughters here, Rachel and Leah, they're my daughters. Vabanim Banai, your children, my grandchildren, they're from me. Vatzon Tzoni, all the sheep that you have, all the cattle, all the livestock, it all came from me. V'chol asher ata roeh, everything you see here, everything in your camp, lihu, it all came from me. V'livnotai ma'aseh la'ilah hayom, and to my daughters, what can I do for them today? O livnei asher yaladu, or to the children that they gave birth to, even though they're all mine, you're stealing them from me, you're taking them away, you didn't give me a chance to kiss them goodbye, I won't ever see them again. In other words, Lavan is saying, I wish I could have my daughters and my grandchildren back, because your God intervened, and is not allowing me to take them back home. In the eyes of Lavan, Yaakov came to him empty-handed. He came penniless, running away. Lavan put him into business. He gave him his two daughters for wives. He enabled him to grow and prosper. In Lavan's eyes, everything that Yaakov has belongs to him. In Yaakov's eyes, everything that he has is attributed to God. V'ata, and now, l'chan nichrata brit ani v'ata, let's make a covenant between the two of us. V'ya la'ed b'ni u'b'necha. And it should be a testimony between me and between you. We're going to see here that Lavan does not trust Yaakov at all. And he's worried that Yaakov is going to mistreat his daughters the same way that Lavan felt that Yaakov had mistreated him. Vaykach Yaakov Evan, vayirmeh matzeva. Yaakov took a stone and lifted it up to make a monument. Recall, this is not the first monument Yaakov has made. The first monument he made when he left the Beit El after his prophetic dream and made his promise to build a house for God upon his return. Now we're going to have another matzeva, which will mark his confrontation with Lavan. And finally, we'll have another matzeva after Rachel passes away, as we'll see in Parshat Vayishlach. Pasuk Memvav, Vayomer Yaakov Lechav Liktu Avanim. Yaakov said to his brethren, gather together stones. Vayichu Avanim Vayasu Gal. They gathered together stones and they made a big mound. Vayachlu Sham Alagal. And they ate there together by the mound of stones. Who are these brethren who Yaakov is calling? According to Rashi, he's calling his children. Rashi says, Heim Banav. And even though they're his sons, he calls them brothers because they're like brothers to him in trouble and in war. However, Ramban disagrees and claims that Echav includes the family of Lavan because the word Achim in Tanakh means relatives in general. It doesn't just mean brother. Any type of relative can be referred to as Ach, as Avram tells Lot earlier, Ki Anashim Achim Anachnu. Considering that Lavan is Yaakov's uncle, therefore all of Lavan's relatives are Yaakov's relatives as well. Therefore, Yaakov can call all his brethren together, in other words, all of his relatives, to gather together to make this treaty. Therefore, it makes more sense, as Ramban explains, that the people gathering the rocks, together with Yaakov, are the people from Lavan's camp as well. Pasuk Mem Zayin, Vayikra lo Lavan, Yigar Sahututa. Lavan called the place by its Aramaic name, which is a translation for Gal-Ed. The Yaakov kara lo Gal-Ed. Yaakov called its name Gal-Ed. A Gal is a mound of stones, and Ed, it will be testimony in the treaty they're making between Lavan and Yaakov. Vayomer Lavan. Lavan is going to stipulate now the terms of this agreement. Hagal hazeh eid b'ni u'b'necha hayom. This mound of stones will be a testimony between me and you today. Al ken kra shmo Gal-Ed. Therefore, they call the name of that place Gal-Ed. V'hamitzpah asher amar. And the lookout point, which they were standing on, and they said about it, Yitzef Adonai b'ni u'b'necha. God should take a look from here between me and you, kini sater ish mireihu, because we will not be able to see one another. In other words, Lavan is going back to the area of Haran. Yaakov is going to continue to the land of Canaan. However, Har Gilad is a very high mountain, which has a very beautiful view in all directions. And figuratively speaking, this monument where they're making this treaty, they're treating it as though from this place God can watch both sides and make sure that both sides do not break this agreement. What does Lavan stipulate now in this agreement? Im taned benotai, that you should not mistreat my daughters, vim tikach nashim abnotai, and you should not take any additional wives in addition to my daughters, eni shimanu. As Radach explains, Eni Shimanu is exactly the reason why we need this galed, where God will view from up here, because we won't be able to see each other. As neither one of us will be able to see what the other one's doing, God will view from here, and therefore the fear of God and the fear of this covenant should scare you from doing any harm to my daughters. We see from here that Lavan is still worried about Yaakov mistreating his own daughters. And now Lavan concludes his stipulation, Re'ei Elohim eid b'ni u'b'necha. God should see and be the witness between me and you. After making this first stipulation to ensure that Yaakov will treat his daughters properly, Lavan is going to make an additional stipulation about going to war. Vayomer Lavan le'Yaakov. Lavan said to Yaakov, Hinei ha'gal hazeh, v'hinei ha'matzevah. Behold this mound of stones, and this monument that we've erected, asher yariti b'ni u'b'necha, which I have set up between me and you, eid ha'gal hazeh, this mound will be testimony, v'eid ha'matzevah, and so too this monument will be testimony. Im ani lo avor elecha et ha'gal hazeh, v'imata lo tavor elai et ha'gal hazeh, v'et ha'matzevah hazot l'ra. This will be a boundary marker, that you are not allowed to pass this boundary towards me to do anything bad to me. In the same way, I'm not going to pass this marker or this monument to do anything bad to you. Who's going to oversee this treaty? Elohei Avraham. As all the commentators say, this word is Kodesh. Ve'elohei Nachor. That's already Lavan speaking, talking about the God of his grandfather. Yishpetu b'neinu. They should judge between us. Elohei Avihem. The God of the respective fathers. Ve'eshavai Yaakov b'fachad Aviv Yitzchak. However, Yaakov, when he swore to this agreement, swore in the name of the fear of his father Yitzchak, and didn't use the names of God that Lavan was referring to. To finalize this agreement, like after any treaty, the two parties sit down to a festive meal. Pasuk Nundalid, Vaisbach Yaakov Zebach Bahar. Therefore, Yaakov makes a cookout or a barbecue on the mountain. A festive offering is referred to in Tanakh as a Zebach. But here, this is not a Zebach to God. This is a Zebach between Yaakov and Lavan. Vaikra Lechav Lechol Lachem. Yaakov once again calls his brethren to eat bread, or not probably not just eat bread, but to eat food together at the site. Ve'achlu lechem ve'yalinu bahar. They ate together, and they slept that night on the mountain in the Gilad. Then the next morning, Pasuk Aleph and Perek Lamed Bet, ve'ashkem Lavan ba'boker. Lavan got up in the morning, ve'nashek levanav ve'livnotav ve'barecheten. He gave kisses to his sons and to his daughters, referring here obviously to his grandchildren, and to his daughters Rachel and Leah. And he also blessed them. Ve'elech, and he went. Vayashav Lavan limkomo, and Lavan returned to his own place. This very interesting closure here, that everything that Lavan claimed he wanted to do, to make a party and have a celebration and to kiss his children goodbye, by the time this whole incident is over, Lavan is finally able to do what he wanted to do in the first place. We'll discuss the nature of Lavan's behavior very soon, as soon as we finish the last two psukim. Pasuk bet, Yaakov halach ledarko. Yaakov also continued on his way. And he was met by the angels of God. Recall how the parsha began. When he was leaving Beersheba on his way to Haran, he bumped into the place, and there he saw Malachi Elohim going up and down. Here again, he happens to meet the angels of God, this time on his way back. Yaakov said, when he saw these angels of God, Machane Elohim ze, this must be the camp of God. He called the name of this place where his camp is, and also a camp of many angels of God. He called the place Machanaim, being two camps being together. Rashi explains that these were the angels of the land of Israel, who were now going a little bit over the border to meet him in order to accompany him to the land of Israel. This is a fulfillment of God's promise when he told Yaakov, when he was still by Lavan, to return to the land of Israel, and there he'll be with him. Shuv el eretz avotecha ve'yayimach. Return to the land of your father, and there I'll take care of you. Indeed now, Yaakov had returned to the land, and therefore God is sending his angels to take care of him and watch him on his way. It's very meaningful that when we say Tfilat HaDerech, this is one of the psukim which we quote, because here's an example of God sending his messengers to help Yaakov on his journey by fulfilling a commandment that God had given him. When we read about this confrontation between Lavan and Yaakov, with a cursory reading, it definitely seems like Lavan has a very legitimate claim. And as we mentioned before, in his own eyes, he's 100% sure that he's the righteous one, and Yaakov is a culprit. The question is, what do we learn from the Torah's detail between all these conversations and all this tension between Yaakov and Lavan? In general, there's two types of villains in Tanakh. There's the villains who know they're villains, like Amalek. There's evil people who know they're evil and do evil, but don't care. They take and steal whatever they can, and morals and ethical behavior doesn't bother them at all. But there's evil people like Lavan who think that they're right. They have a warped sense of justice and what's right and wrong, And in their eyes, they're the righteous ones, and people like Yaakov are the evil ones. And throughout Jewish history, we always have to confront villains like Lavan, just like we have villains that we have to confront like Amalek. By studying this story about Yaakov and Lavan, may enable us to have a better understanding of the different type of villains and enemies that we confront throughout Jewish history. How someone deals with a villain who thinks he's a righteous person is very different than how someone deals with a villain who knows he's evil. One could also suggest that there's a deeper theme here, and that is, what was the reason for Yaakov's need to go to live some 20 years by Lavan? If you recall from the story in Parshat Toldot, when Yitzchak wanted to give the blessing to Esav, and instead Rivka instructed Yaakov to take the blessing instead, the blessing that Yitzchak wanted to give was one of prosperity and leadership. At that time, Yitzchak had the understanding that both of his children would be chosen. He had no reason to think otherwise. God had never told him anything other than the fact that all of his children would be chosen. Yitzchak, thinking that both Yaakov and Esav would be the people of Israel, he had to divide up the leadership between his two sons. If you had to choose between Yaakov and Esav, who would lead the country, who would fight the wars, who would run the economy, you would need the character of Esav to do something like that. Yaakov, who was an Ish Tam Yoshev Alim, he was a simple man, sitting in tents, the more righteous son, he could have had a job to be the rabbi, to be the education minister, or to be maybe a priest. But to be a political leader, Yaakov did not have the traits, and therefore Yitzchak understood that the blessing that Esav needs would be a blessing of leadership, and because of his weaknesses, Esav actually needed the blessing to make sure he developed his strengths in the proper direction. Rivka knew otherwise. As God had told her when she was expecting the twins that there were two nations, Rivka realized that only one of the sons would be chosen, and therefore she sends Yaakov to get the blessing instead. However, when you look at that story, neither son got the blessing. Esav cannot receive the blessing because his personality was not proper and God did not want him to be the future of the people of Israel. On the other hand, Yaakov, up until that time, was not worthy of receiving the blessing either because he didn't have the character that was necessary to take on that leadership role. If you look carefully at that story in Parshat Toldot, the bracha was given to the ko of Yaakov and the Adam of Esav. And that's a beautiful sentence that Yitzchak says, Hako ko Yaakov v'yadayim yidei Esav. The blessing went to a hybrid between Yaakov and Esav. It was the character of Esav, but the voice and the personality of Yaakov. In order to be worthy of that blessing, to become the nation of Israel, Yaakov had to be sent into some basic training. He had to learn what it means to be an Esav. To be a nation representing God, first and foremost, you have to be spiritual. You have to have the call of Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov, and the personality of Yaakov. But in addition to that, there are times when we have to put on the hands and the gloves of Esav. Indeed, Yitzchak gave him that blessing. But in order for that blessing to be complete, in order for Yaakov to get his name changed to Yisrael, as we'll see in Parshat Vayishlach, God had to send Yaakov into some 20 years of training to learn what it means to deal with someone like Lavan, and to learn the responsibility, on the one hand, of taking care of a family, and on the other hand, of dealing in business with characters like Lavan. It's after these 20 years of training and difficulties and experience that on his way home, he's going to meet the Malach in Parshat Vayishlach, who Chazal identify as representing the concept of Esav. He'll be able to win that struggle with that Malach, and afterward, he'll be worthy of getting the blessing of God and the name change to Yisrael, to have the character that Am Yisrael will need for all generations, which is, first and foremost, the call of Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov, even though every once in a while we have to put on the hands of Esav and learn to deal with the realities of establishing a nation representing God in the land of Israel. I want to wish everyone a Shabbat Shalom, and Emir Tzashem will be back in the study of Shnei Mikra when we study Parshat Vayeshev in 2 weeks.